Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, as you may have heard in our recent preview, Connecticut's Northeast Organic Farming Association, or NOFA, held their 43rd winter conference last weekend at Eastern Connecticut State University. And For the People was there to put together a live special report that digs into everything from worms and bugs to a proposed state constitutional amendment and making agriculture more sustainable and equitable, especially for veterans, minority community members, and new Connecticut farmers. But before we head out into the conference, we want to remind you that on March 12th at 11 a.m., you can join Optimus Healthcare's 7th Annual Mental Health Symposium and register to participate in an authentic and vulnerable discussion about managing anxiety in uncertain times for LGBTQ plus populations. This virtual event features Dr. Michael Stokes, a licensed professional counselor with a doctorate in professional counseling and supervision who specializes in working with LGBTQ plus individuals and families. You can learn more and register by visiting optimushealthcare.org.
All right. Well, while it's quiet, we have wrangled NOFA's executive director, who you heard on our program a couple of weeks ago, previewing this 43rd annual CT NOFA Winter Conference here on the beautiful campus of Eastern Connecticut State University. We've been here before, Jeremy, but you guys move this event around pretty well. What are a couple of the things today that you're getting or feeling like you're getting a lot of traction on?
Yeah, thank you. There's been a lot of excitement around today. It's a really, I'll say, difficult time right now in the country, and so people are excited about gathering and being together. This is sort of our cumulative effort of our work throughout the year. But I will shout out Dr. Kim Stoner, who's our director of advocacy. She's doing an excellent workshop as we speak on how to push back against the things we're having. And I'll be totally honest, it's kind of a precarious time for CTNOFA. All of our funding has been frozen out by the federal government. And so, you know, we're continuing that work anyway, and we will pivot as needed. But that's the feeling that we're getting today is of excitement and energy. And more than that, it's a feeling of wanting to make a difference and do something, you know, to take action against things that are happening to our farmers here in Connecticut.
Well, certainly we're broadcasting this series of segments from the conference after it's over, but that just means time is of the essence for people to get involved and support NOFA, and there are a number of different ways that they can either support through membership, volunteerism, or donation. But there are also benefits that we briefly discussed on the program a few weeks ago that NOFA gives back to individuals who are interested in organic gardening and lawn care and landscape practices, right?
Yeah, that's true. There's a list of benefits on our website, ctnofa.org. You know, we have a bunch of stuff happening throughout the year that members love to come to, whether it's education, whether it's being a part of the bulk order program, which is, you know, discounted gardening supplies, gardening and farming supplies, a subscription to the Natural Farmer, and many things throughout the year that members might benefit from.
Do you think that the advocacy piece is going to have to make room for, or even perhaps eclipse or force you to step back a little bit on some of the other components of what NOFA does?
So right now we are continuing with what we're doing, funded or not. We're going to work this out until it gets resolved. We'll have to pivot. Certainly we'll have to look for funding elsewhere. But right now we're staying the course. You know, we feel like our work is important and these programs are critical. And so we're going to continue them until we can't. So that's the plan for now. And you know, we have some money to keep going, and certainly it'll be helpful to have some support for our members and for those wanting to support CTNOFA. But I'll also say that beyond CTNOFA, right, there's being contracts that are being canceled from farmers, grants that are being frozen up. So our farmers particularly are being affected. So I would encourage those listening, go buy your CSA now. You know, go talk to your farmer, ask what they need. If you have the means, don't, you know, make a donation to your local farmer. Purchase an extra CSA for a friend. Do what you can to support the farmers who are really struggling right now because of, or being affected right now because of these freezes.
Very good. So we joke that you'll begin planning the next conference tomorrow morning as we speak from the floor of the conference itself. But what's next for NOFA in terms of you know, public-facing activities?
Yeah, thank you. So it's absolutely right. We do tend to have a meeting right after the conference and start figuring out a date for next year. So the conference planning does take all year, and it's a fun thing to do. We like it. But as far as our programs throughout what's next, we're still doing the Transition Organic Partnership Program. I think we have, you'll have to fact check me, but I think we have 9 or 10 farms that are going to transition to organic certification this year from our Transition Organic Partnership Program. Our organic land care program is full throttle. We've just trained another 31 landscapers in organic methods, and they've been accredited through our program. They're just about to graduate May 15th. We are updating the standards for organic land care, which is sort of the living document that describes what organic landscaping is. It's modeled after USDA organic. We're updating those. Our soil health program, run by Monique Bosch, we're launching a new class. She's still doing the microscopy courses. And we have an exciting project that's coming up funded through the CTRC&D, which is not frozen, thankfully, where we're building a compost tea education truck where we'll go around Connecticut to farms and teach them how to brew and use compost tea to their benefit.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to your advocacy representative and some of the other folks who are doing the kinds of things that you're talking about training new folks to do, whether it's bringing the initiative to them or having them come to you. So if folks want to get involved or maybe even just make a donation to the cause, where do they start? What's the website?
Yeah, you can go right to ctnofa.org. Right in the homepage, there's all the buttons and bells and whistles you'll see. Everything you'll need is right there.
Very good. The ringmaster of the annual NOFA Winter Conference, Jeremy Pelletier, Executive Director of NOFA CT. This is their 43rd conference here at Eastern Connecticut State University, and we're going to head out and meet some of the folks who are teaching and learning and displaying here. So, Jeremy, best of luck for the rest of the day and on all your future work, and anything we could do for you, don't hesitate to call.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we are here in the vendor section of the 43rd Connecticut NOFA Winter Conference at Eastern Connecticut State University, and pleased to make the acquaintance of Raquel Anderson. She's the owner of She Worms Composting. Did you know 30% of your waste that's coming out of your household is food waste? Well, Raquel has some fantastic ideas for you, and she wants to meet you if you're interested in knocking that number down to zero, right, Raquel?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much, John, for taking the time out to interview me.
Yeah.
I'm Raquel Anderson. I'm the owner of She Worms Composting. How did I come about making this company or starting my company? I myself needed to reduce my waste. In 2020, my husband and I, we relocated from New York to CT. And the experience I had with my yard waste basically changed everything. The landscaper that day, he basically cut all my grass clippings, my grass, and left all the clippings on the lawn. And when I asked him, you know, are you going to remove your the rest of this clippings, he said, no, I have to pay him extra. I'm like, I'm not paying you extra. He goes, well, composted. I'm like, what's compost? And literally, my life changed after that.
Okay.
So I started doing backyard composting. And where we were living in New York, we were in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. You know, it's small space living.
Sure.
And as I started to see the results of doing my own composting, the idea came to me, what if I was able to help people in small space living creating their own soil who are interested in growing their own gardens? Because my mother-in-law, where we lived, she did her own gardening.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a...
on like a porch or a roof,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah. So my idea for my business started then. And I had another name, but it was She Lawns Compost. But every time I explained to somebody or I gave my business name, they always went, are you into lawn care or something? And I'm like, no. So I had to pivot. So, you know, I took some time, rethunk everything, you know, did some training with UConn Master Composting Program.
Yeah.
And Don Pettinelli, I love you. And I realized that there were different methods to composting, including worm composting or vermicomposting.
Mm-hmm.
So as my flyer shows, you know, the majority of our waste is food waste. A household generates a lot of food waste.
And you know, so bad for the environment.
Yeah, and it's bad for the environment. And a lot of people can't necessarily identify that, but when you start to, like, break the numbers down that, hey, once your truck comes to pick up your waste, the weight of, let's say, a whole community, the weight of our waste at the landfill adds to, like, or taxes or the cost, and,
sure,
you know, to for tipping fees and all of that.
Yeah.
How can that be reduced and then trickle down into the community? So that's how I realized that, you know, there, mm-hmm, is a real solution that food recycling, yeah, offers. So I coupled food waste recycling with vermicomposting and started She Worms Composting.
So what is it that you are teaching people and purveying today here at the NOFA conference?
Okay, so today I'm offering the service or showing people that I offer the service of picking up your food waste, mm, for recycling. I'm down in Fairfield County for now. And in exchange, I have different levels. I have the gold, the silver, and the bronze level. And each level is based on your family size.
Wow.
And in exchange for that, twice a year, based for the gold and the silver level, you get compost in return. So you get compost for your spring. You can get compost for your fall.
Okay.
Because some people, you know, we plant in different,
sure,
times,
sure,
of the year.
Yeah.
And then I also have I have merchandise. I started to... the idea came to me, how can I get people who are in the black and the brown community to start having an interest in composting? Because,
yeah,
most people don't. And last year, I came up with... Well, I mean, it's a popular slogan, but I said, make compost great again.
Yeah.
And when I wear that T-shirt, everybody's like, what? What's compost? And then I start to engage people in conversation.
Yes.
That, hey, composting is recycling food waste, your yard waste. You can use this soil in and around your home. Would you be interested in learning more? So I have merchandise for sale. I also have compost extract that I'm giving away as samples,
mm-hmm,
in exchange for just signing up,
yep,
for my newsletters and my pages.
And what is the extract?
The extract is the product or the final product from my worms. And you can brew it as a tea and use it on your plants or your seedlings for the spring. You can also use it as top dressing, like around for your potted plants and even for your outdoor gardens. But based on the volume, it's just a 1 pound bag right now. You just brew it as a tea in a 5 gallon bucket and you can utilize that in the garden for the spring or your seedling plants.
Very good. So how do people find out more about you? Where are you based out of?
I'm based in Stamford City right,
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
My website is www.shewormscomposting.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook at She Worms Composting.
Raquel Anderson, who is the owner of She Worms Composting. We hope you'll get to know her, shewormscomposting.com, or check her out on social, and she will be happy to expand on this little five-minute educational seminar that we were just able to engage here for our award-winning For the People. Raquel, thank you so much. Great
thank
to meet you.
John.
Best of luck today.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. Thank you, John.
Well, as we continue making our way here through the CT NOFA conference at Eastern Connecticut State University, we have had the pleasure of meeting Jovan Bryan and Ricky Bentley. And before we even turn on the microphone, they've already angled their way into yet another full-length segment. But we're going to try to cram as much information as we can into the 5 or 6 minutes that we have with them right now, and we'll talk to them again. So, in a nutshell, if it's even possible to put it there, Jovan, tell me a little bit about maybe what brought you to this initiative and what is special about the council to you.
So the Connecticut Land Conservation Council, we're the umbrella organization for the land trusts in the state of Connecticut. There are about 120 land trusts in Connecticut for our about 169 municipalities, so that's almost one per town. Yeah. They range from very hyper-local to more broad and regional. Some have full staff. And
go Aspetuck.
Many of them are all volunteer. Yeah. So as the statewide umbrella organization, we're really just a service provider for all of them, helping them complete their mission the best way they can. We do that through various numbers of supports, such as some grants, workshops, technical assistance being like structuring, a board or writing grants or easement legal documents and things like that. We also are their voice at the state capitol. We do a lot of policy and advocacy work for the land trust on their behalf.
Yeah. We've done a few full segments on easements and how they work. Easements are a real spectacular tool for folks, no matter what their initiative to conserve, Ricky. Let's talk a little bit more about your role and what brought you to the cause.
Yeah. I'm Ricky Bentley. I work as the Climate Smart Stewardship Coordinator. We have a Climate Smart Land Stewardship Grant Program. We are re-granting funds from the Connecticut State Department of Agriculture directly to land trusts for their stewardship work and to build resilience into the landscapes. This is work that I was really interested in. I grew up on a farm. I grew up playing in the woods, and so being outside and working outside was something that was really important to me, and CLCC does a really great job of representing the different land trusts across the state and building their capacity to do the work that they do. And so we have a number of different grant programs. The grant program that I administer helps with directly planning and implementing that stewardship work.
Yeah. Well, as Jovan mentioned, we almost have a land trust corresponding with every city and town in the state, and it really does seem like Connecticut, for its size, is doing a proportionately good job in preserving and protecting these open spaces.
Yeah, I believe we're one of the like densest states.
I think second most land trust per capita of any state, I believe.
Yeah. So we really do a pretty good job of highlighting the importance from a organizational standpoint. A lot of what, back to your first question about what pulled me here, I'm our community conservation coordinator. So I help with programs, partnerships, and projects that help land trusts to broaden their audience and deepen their community impact. So really getting kind of like boots on the ground to more people that might not know exactly the mechanisms of easements, private conservation, all those technical terms, but, you know, are still interested in like natural landscapes, forests. And so just, kind of deviating a little way from the more technical side and just getting to more people and places. That's what drew me to the work.
Okay.
I loved being outside and enjoying the outdoors. And as I was moving throughout my academic studies, I really get a passion of seeing like people in the places that I go, more people. Yeah. And so the Connecticut Land Conservation Council really has that kind of built in, that importance of inclusion and belonging for everyone to enjoy the benefits of conservation and nature, not just the ecological impact, but the community impacts, the public health impact. We saw a lot after the COVID-19 pandemic, people seeing the importance of being able to get outside and enjoy the open space. We also saw how some people have some access issues to that open space, and we've done a good job of just kind of representing their voices best we can, bringing that importance to all these hyperlocal land trusts that want to do just, you know, a little bit more outside of just, you know, just protecting land, but also making sure that people are able to enjoy it. So I help a lot with that work.
Well, when you're driving through some of Connecticut's more outer suburban and rural areas, it's easy to see all the open space and forest land, but there's a shocking amount of opportunity in urban and thicker suburban areas, right, Ricky?
Yeah, absolutely. Our urban and semi-urban green spaces play a very crucial role in terms of land access for people to get outside, but also just in terms of ecosystem services for those places, providing important habitat for our animals, critters that we love to see. Yeah, there's quite a few land trusts that serve that kind of semi-urban, suburban spectrum of land use, and they are doing some of the most really important work that against development pressure in the state. One of the things that we are working on is that, affordable housing is something that is often thought to be in opposition to land conservation,
yes.
But that is something that actually can work really well in tandem with what we do. It just takes collaboration and intentional planning. And so these land trusts that are in those regions are playing a really crucial role in that work.
Yeah, I think in my experience, when you bring thoughtful housing development to suburban and even rural areas, you create communities of stewards for the rest of the space that surrounds them.
Yeah, I love that you kind of brought this question up because it's a lot of conversations that I'm a part of. Traditionally we tend to think is conservation as like hundreds of acres, dozens of acres, but in the more urban, suburban areas, it's very part and parcel. So part of what I try to do is just try to instill the importance of those like piecemeal lots and acres. And as Ricky said, also there's a lot of different issues in these like dense urban areas, like affordable housing. So just seeing where we can fit and who we can fit with. Affordable housing has seen kind of like an either or. It's either you use this lot for, an affordable housing development, or, you protect, it because there's trees. We've seen that it doesn't have to be that way. There can be some intuitive or innovative partnerships. Say you only develop like the front, like 5 acres, that has road frontage, and then you conserve the back half. And it enhances the community in both ways. One, people have an affordable place to live, and two, they also get the benefit of having, all this conservation land right behind them. They can go out and they don't have to drive if they even have, transportation to go out and drive with. Yeah. Another thing, we're at the CT NOFA conference, so food is a big issue, food insecurity in these areas, and just, community gardens and community just community farming, urban farming, is something that also we try to kind of promote that that maybe land trusts haven't traditionally thought about, but could either like partner or endorsing things like that. Thinking outside the box a little bit
How do people get to know more of what you're doing and perhaps support you? Is there a website?
So yeah, they can find us at ctconservation.org. Right now, they'll probably take us to our splash page. We have our annual conference coming up in March 22nd, where we host. It's at Wesleyan University in Middletown. Yeah, we host a large amount of people. It's very well attended. 500 to 600 people. Tons and tons of workshops. I don't know how many workshops we've that kind of cover the broad spectrum of conservation, from, you know, just traditional conservation issues, you know, how easements work, things like that, to some of the work that Ricky and I do. It's a little bit something for everyone, and it's bigger and bigger every year, and it's always pretty well attended for
As folks are probably gathering, if they're listening, that there is a lot more to talk about, so hopefully we'll catch up with you after that conference to do maybe like a recap segment, and you could talk a little bit more about that, and we'll get more folks involved. But for now, we'll say farewell. Jovan Bryan and Ricky Bentley, representing the Connecticut Land Conservation Council here at the 43rd Winter Conference for CT NOFA at Eastern Connecticut State University. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, since we got a chance to talk about worms, now let's talk about bugs. And we're with the proper person to do it. Catherine Dugas is here at the 43rd Winter Conference for CT NOFA. And she is with our friends down the road at the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven. And she is an agricultural research technician from the Departments of Entomology and Plant Pathology. Long title, but it sounds like... You're the bug lady is easy way.
A bug lady.
as long as you're not bugging people with information, because that's why you're here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at the station.
Yeah, well, I'm an entomologist working in the insect information office primarily, though we do also have a plant disease information office. Okay. Both of those are open to the public, free service. So if you have a weird bug, you have a issue with a plant, or you just saw something interesting and you have some questions about it, you know, feel free to stop by, email us, give us a call. You know, our doors are open.
Yeah, you guys do critical work, because invasive bugs have been an escalating problem, not just for farmers, but for vast tracts of woodlands and from people's yards and landscaping. What are a few of the most critical things that you guys have your eyes on these days?
So the one that most people talk about is spotted lanternfly. That's been a perennial issue probably since 2014 was when it was found in North America.
Okay.
We've had it in Connecticut since 2020, and it's primarily along the coast and mostly in Fairfield, New Haven counties, though it has been found in all 8 counties. And that's it is a pest that is it starts in the spring, but it's very small. You know, it's in its nymphal stage. Most people start reporting it when they see it in the fall, when it's in its adult stage.
And it ain't just one.
Hmm?
No,
absolutely no. It's swarms, you know, plagues.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've had them visiting and installing an encampment around our building down in Milford on Wheeler's Farms Road. So, I also had the opportunity to be in Pittsburgh last year, where you almost couldn't see the sidewalk for the lanternflies.
Yeah.
It was really the most amazing thing. I never thought I'd see like a plague of locusts, but I guess that's about as close as you get.
Yeah, so because this is a new species, you know, it's kind of settling into our environment, and our environment's kind of still reacting to it. So yeah, that's what happens, is you get these very kind of alarming large population booms. The hope, though, is that as time goes on, and they're starting to see this in Pennsylvania, which is where it was first found, is that those populations get a little less plaguey and a little more just typical.
Yeah, okay.
And management becomes a little less frantic, basically.
What would you say are the biggest worry for folks representing the visitors and participants here at the NOFA conference today? What's really bugging farmers and gardeners these days that you guys can actually offer some guidance in trying to minimize or mitigate?
Well, any of your typical garden pests, you know, things like four-lined plant bug, aphids, it's usually a very common pest. you know, any of the foliage feeding caterpillars, especially, you know, cabbage worm and other things that are eating the plants that we want to grow and to enjoy.
Yeah. Now, can people come to you to learn non-chemical ways to try to hedge against or reduce or eliminate pests in the garden or farm?
Oh, sure. So we kind of do the integrated pest management approach, you know. So it's a toolbox. Pesticides are a tool in the toolbox, but not the only tool in the toolbox. So if people come to us, we can offer different strategies, and some of them do not involve chemicals. Yeah.
By the same token, I imagine there have to be at least a few instances of pests that crop up in our region that are best handled with chemical means.
Yes.
So you also have other programs and activities going on. Do you host events or do classes or workshops going into the growing season as we are right now, beginning of March?
Yeah, all the time. So we do talks with garden clubs. There are various associations that meet at the experiment station and may actually have workshops run by experiment station staff. We also have, this is more into the summer, in August, the first Wednesday of August is our annual Plant Science Day. That's held actually a little further up the road. That's in Hamden at Lockwood Farm. It's right next to Sleeping Giant. That, if you want to know anything and everything about what the station does, that is the place to go, and that is the time to go. Every scientist will be out there. They'll either be doing tours of their research plots, or they'll have tables explaining what they do in laboratories. I highly recommend that.
Excellent. Well, Catherine, I hope folks hear this spot and engage more with all the great work you and your colleagues are doing at the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station. Folks, if you want to go online and begin exploring all of the resources that Catherine barely touched on in our a few minutes with her today at the NOFA conference, you can go to portal.ct.gov/CAES for the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station. Catherine Dugas is an agricultural research technician with the Departments of Entomology and Plant Pathology. Catherine, appreciate your time today. Thank you.
No problem.
It's nice to see familiar faces, especially when it comes to seeing them at more than one event a year. We've spoken to Corey Fink before. He's representing Focus Seeds here at the 43rd Winter Conference for CT NOFA. Corey, are you part of the NOFA movement?
Yeah, I've been a member of NOFA since 2014, so it's been over 10 years now.
So tell us a little bit about how NOFA benefits the work that you're doing.
One thing they do is they offer a farm-to-food guide, so it's a simple way for people who are looking online to find a local farm, a CSA to join, or, you know, just good organic farms in the area to go check out and support. That's a great resource they offer.
So what brings you to the conference today?
Well, today I am representing my company selling vegetable herb and cannabis seeds.
And I think we were at the first Expo Canna right on the cusp of it becoming legal for folks to be able to grow their own legal recreational cannabis in there on their property. From your perspective, is that a movement that has been sustained or is even growing?
Yeah, it's definitely growing. Connecticut, I believe it was 2022, they passed home grow for medical patients, and then a year later, it was made legal for everyone over the age of 21 in the state of Connecticut. So obviously, it's just been growing since then, and even across the country now, we have more states that are, you know, making it legal to grow your own at home. So yeah, it's becoming one of the biggest gardening demographics in the country now.
So if you're talking to people who have availed themselves to the public recreational cannabis retail market, what are a couple of things that they may be surprised to know about growing their own?
Well, one thing is the quality. You have more control over the quality of the plant that you grow. Obviously, you can pay attention to it more. And then also, you can have varieties that suit you for whatever, for your, you know, medical needs or anything like that. Whereas, you know, cannabis that you find at the dispensaries and or you know, on just on the regular market is not really necessarily tailored to something specific, whether it's pain management, you know, being able to fall asleep, helping with aches and pains, digestion issues, all that. You're able to grow a variety that does well for you specifically.
Have you been able to help people find that seed sweet spot, if you will, where they're able to, in a relatively short amount of time, produce something that is medicinally helpful to them?
Yeah, so I actually breed for medicinal effects first. So a lot of the varieties I have some CBD or CBG in them. And that, you know, like I said before, is great for things like inflammation, pain. And so I have, you know, several varieties that help with that. And I have people who, you know, have gotten back to me after they've grown out their own crop and said, like, this, you know, this 2-to-1 variety that was, you know, 2-to-1 ratio of THC to CBD was something that helped them more than what they were able to get at their local dispensary, which is, you know, normally high THC flower.
So it sounds like there's really, for folks that are relatively uninducted, there's really a lot more to it than just an intoxicating effect.
Yeah, so the effects you get from cannabis are going to vary from person to person and variety to variety. And, you know, it's a combination of the cannabinoids, terpenes, and then other compounds in the plant that are all contributing to those effects. A lot of people aren't aware of, you know, what they call the entourage effect and how all those different compounds work together. You know, unfortunately, with the way the industry is now, a lot of people see, you know, just THC percentages and think that's the only thing that's contributing to, you know, the effects that it's having on your body and on your mind. But yeah, there's a lot more to it than that, and we're learning more all the time too.
So in your 10 plus years as a member of NOFA and a seed developer, have you actually gotten to the point where you have seed strains that you call your own?
Yeah, so as far as cannabis, I've been breeding since 2019. So the majority of what I offer to people is bred by me. I have a couple close friends that I work with. And then even my vegetable seeds, I have some varieties that I bred that are suited to growing in Connecticut, some rare, unique things.
Some like heirloom type vegetables?
Yeah, so one is a vining squash grass, and I don't know if anyone's familiar with the squash vine borer, but it bores into the stems and squash plants and kills it. I help a friend of mine breed a variety that it's a vining squash, so at the nodes they actually root into the ground, which so if the vine borer bores into the squash, it doesn't kill the whole plant. So you're able to get a longer harvest off of your squashes.
So there is crossover effect between folks like you who work sort of in the cannabis arena to folks that are gardening for food.
Yeah, I mean, so I do both. I'm a vegetable seed farmer as well as a cannabis seed farmer, and I don't think there's any reason why people shouldn't grow both in their gardens. They're great plants, yeah.
How do people meet you and learn more about what you could do for them?
Yeah, so you can visit my website, Focus Seeds, and that's P-H-O-C-A-S, and seeds as in vegetable seeds.
.com,
yes.
Very good. Excellent. Great to see you again. Corey Fink, a voice who has been on our program before, representing Focus Seeds here at the NOFA conference at Eastern Connecticut State University. Appreciate it, Corey. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
As we settle into the midday here at the CT NOFA Winter Conference, I have had the pleasure of connecting with Ella Kennan, who is a coordinator with the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance. We've talked to them before on this program, but we can never get enough farmers, especially young farmers and new farmers here in Connecticut. And Ella's going to tell you why and how her organization can help you if it's something you're interested in learning about. No commitments necessary, right, Ella?
Correct,
it's just
absolutely.
Right. It's just learning that matters. Yes. So tell me a little bit about the Alliance and what folks need to know if they're thinking about or know somebody who's interested in maybe becoming a farmer here in Connecticut.
So we absolutely need more farmers in Connecticut. The average age of the farmer here is 59. We need that next generation to come shape us and be able to feed us. So a really great way to start with NICFA, the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance, is on our listserv. Our listserv has over 660 people. They talk about everything from events like the CT NOFA conference to which type of compost should I buy, what seed works best. We, NICFA, have also a lot of community building events. We meet in the spring and the fall to just have farmers get together, share their ideas, share their knowledge, share their woes and their strengths. And we also have themed meetings throughout the summer. It might be on something like grant writing or on urban farming or whatever interests people have.
So what brought you to this cause?
Everyone eats. Everyone has to eat. Agriculture is the fundamental aspect of human society, right? Like we started human civilization when we started agriculture. And we're going to keep feeding ourselves for as long as there's humanity. So we have to be part of ag. We have to care about where our food comes from.
You mentioned before we turn on the mic, you've only been with the organization a little under a year, but from first glance and in these early days of your time with the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance, how are we doing as a state in getting the message out that farming is a viable career to consider?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think within the farming community, there's so much strength and energy. It's always great to be in an environment like this because you just see the magic that happens when farmers get together. Outside of the farming community, I think that people forget where their food comes from. I think it just kind of appears, and we don't think too much about the process beforehand. And so I think there's a lot of space for people to get more engaged in, like, ag is something that I could do, or ag is something that I could support my neighbor with.
Connecticut has enjoyed and always really enjoyed throughout its history an influx of people from other places, and ethnic food is a growing component of our daily diets, and a lot of restaurants are picking up on it. There's an especially important place for farmers of varying cultural and heritage backgrounds, right?
Absolutely. I think diversity in farming is a necessary component of climate resilience, first off, but also, yes, we all get enriched when the culinary options are broader, and that happens with farmers having different experiences.
So what is an easy way for somebody who may be interested but doesn't necessarily, as I said earlier, want to make that commitment? What would you suggest are a couple of the easiest ways for them to kind of dip their toe in the Alliance work?
Right, so the easiest way is just to go to our website, newconnecticutfarmers.com, and join our listserv. It's free. And then you start seeing what happens. But the actual thing is the doing, right? So start planting in your garden. Start planting in your balcony, if that's what it takes. Start planting in your community garden. Start doing the things. And then being part of conferences like the CT NOFA conference. We have a farmer-to-farmer conference in January. And just, yeah, dip your toe into the community. It is a really friendly, inviting community. You won't regret joining.
And I understand you are bringing a passion for advocacy to the table that may not have been as much of a focus before. What's the heavy lift now, or maybe what's keeping you up at night?
Oh, a lot is keeping me up at night, to be honest. I will say that NICFA has had a foot in advocacy for a long time, but we've been focused mostly on state-level things. The state is incredibly expensive to farm in. Land access is the number one barrier to beginning farmers. So that's something that we've been working on with our partner organizations for many years. Now, unfortunately, we're pivoting more to federal-level stuff because so much is going on. We need the USDA funding. You need the USDA funding because farmers can't farm without it. But also all other things. We need healthcare. We can't farm if people aren't healthy. You can't eat if people aren't healthy. We need to know what's happening with the weather. We need our National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration funded. We need all these things happening. And so, we're ready to see what we can do to make things normal, I guess.
Well, we hope folks will hear this segment and engage with the new Connecticut Farmer Alliance. Their coordinator is Ella Kennan here from the floor at the CTNOFA 43rd Winter Conference. Ella, great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And everyone else, join.
As we continue to make our way through the vendors section of the 43rd Winter Conference that CTNOFA is presenting up here at Eastern Connecticut State University, I found a friend of an old and dear friend, Kim Stoner, a longtime co-board member with Bill Dusing, who, as a lot of longtime listeners will remember or may not remember, was one of the first guests ever for the people over 30 years ago when I took over. And I still remember him often and think of him fondly. Kim Stoner is the Director of Advocacy for Connecticut NOFA, and she is here today educating people about a very important initiative. So, Kim, what's it all about?
Okay, yes, and I'm following in Bill Dusing's shoes. He was the Director of Advocacy towards the end of his life for Connecticut NOFA. Yeah, so this is a table for the Connecticut Environmental Rights Amendment. So this would put your individual right to clean and healthy air, water, soil, ecosystems, and environment, and a safe and stable climate into the state constitution. And so it is right now in the Connecticut General Assembly. It had a public hearing in the Government Administration and Elections Committee, and we're waiting now on a vote in that committee to bring it to the floor. It would go to the Senate floor. Mm-hmm. It is similar to other green amendments across the country. So in Pennsylvania, they have a green amendment, in Montana and in New York. And an example of what this would do in Montana, there was a lawsuit where young people in Montana sued the state of Montana to overturn legislation that would have exempted fossil fuel installations from being evaluated on their effect on climate change. And the young people got the Montana courts to establish their right to a livable climate based on the provisions in the Montana Constitution that give them those environmental rights. Mm.
So, as we know from talking about occasional constitutional amendments, including one that was recently enacted on absentee voting, this is a process.
It's a big lift.
And and perhaps even by the time this segment airs the second Sunday of March, this may be heading toward the floor of the Senate, hopefully. I don't know that there's anything much that people could do in that kind of in-between period, but if it does reach the Senate, advocacy from the grassroots, I imagine, is mission critical to getting it further.
Yes, so what we are doing now is asking people to contact their state legislators, their state representatives and senators, and ask them to co-sponsor SJ 36. So that's the resolution to put the Environmental Rights Amendment on the ballot.
And if it is ultimately successful in this session of the Connecticut General Assembly, would it appear on the ballot as early as this November 25?
So it would not appear that soon. If it were to get 75% of the vote in both the House and the Senate, then it would appear as a referendum in November of 2026.
I see. Okay.
If it passes with less than 75%, then we do the whole thing in the next session after the 2026 election. Yeah.
And so then, by virtue of the fact that it actually makes it to the full assembly, it kind of can become its own placeholder for the next session?
So we do it all. You start over again from the scratch.
Yeah. Oh, from scratch.
You start over again from scratch in the next session. And then if it passes twice in successive sessions, then it would be on the ballot, I guess, in 2028.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So Kim, does the fact that New York has already successfully initiated a similar kind of legislation or constitutional segment, does that make it easier to argue for it? Is there any comfort or anything related to the proximity of a bordering state actually having it that helps bode well for this initiative?
Well, so it's helpful that there are three states, so that we have examples to point to, so that the legislators have some history in the courts when these cases have been brought, and so we can dispel some of the misconceptions. So there's a lot of misinformation that says, for example, that with this amendment you could sue your neighbors or you could sue private companies, and that's not what this is about. This is about the government. This is about government action, so that you can advocate with the government and, if necessary, litigate the government in order to make sure that the government is protecting your rights. And so there is misinformation about a flood of litigation, and that hasn't happened in the other states. So it's helpful to have that background so that people understand better what this amendment would do and what it would not do.
Mm. So in closing, has the fact that even just a handful of other states successfully codified this, are they providing or have they been able to provide resources so that the language and lead up to the Connecticut initiative, like we borrowed from other states to make ours as perfect as we think it can be?
So we have benefited a great deal from Maya Van Rossum, who is in Pennsylvania. She's the Delaware River Keeper, and she was involved in some of the cases involving the Pennsylvania Green Amendment. And so she has been working on green amendments in states across the country, something like 15 or 18 different states across the country. When we need assistance with, as you were saying, like having really good language, we are able to draw on her and on the legal resources that she can draw on to make sure that we have good, strong, enforceable language in Connecticut.
Are there other states that are in our position working toward some sort of a constitutional amendment in regards to the similar outcomes that you're hoping to achieve from this one?
Yes. So I know that it has been proposed in Rhode Island. That's news. That just happened recently.
Oh, okay.
There's a movement going on in Nebraska. There's a movement going on in New Mexico. So, so this is happening across the country. And, and mostly thanks to the energy and information from Maya Van Rossum, who wrote the book on the Green Amendment.
Okay. A building initiative here in Connecticut, which I'm sure folks who are supporting it hopes takes hold nationwide, state by state. We thank you. Kim Stoner is the Director of Advocacy for CT NOFA, working to secure a constitutional right to clean air, pure water, stable climate, and healthy environment for all. Kim, thank you.
Thank you very much.
As we start winding up here today at the conference, we have come across Kristen Swanson. She's the Energy and Environmental Programs Coordinator for Connecticut Resource Conservation and Development. So, Kristen, as if I was just walking up saying, what are you all about here today? What is your program here, and why is it so important that you're out in front of all these organic farmers and enthusiasts?
So we are a nonprofit, and our whole goal is to provide technical assistance to farms throughout Connecticut for our various different programs. One of the hats I'm wearing today is the Connecticut Farm Energy Program, where we assist farms in determining their eligibility for a USDA Rural Development's REAP grant, Renewable Energy for America program. And then we actually walk them from start to finish through their application process to do energy efficiency projects for their farm or renewable energy systems.
I want to say probably twice over the past 6-8 years I've had USDA reps on the program when they have released their list of all of the farms in Connecticut that have benefited from some of these programs. And some of these farmers are really using either like kind of hyper niche applications to save energy, or are really kind of fundamentally bringing their farms into the new age, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's mutually beneficial for them. Obviously, lower their energy costs, that certainly helps, but also just adding renewable energy kind of goes with the whole organic farming principles altogether. You know, we don't want to have this massive carbon footprint on this on our land, and this certainly assists with that. And it helps farms to be more profitable as well.
What are a couple of the latest programs that are being offered to Connecticut farmers and others who may qualify for their program?
So through Connecticut RC&D, we have a bunch of different programs where we can connect farms with a lot of other grants, different organizations such as like the USDA NRCS, where we can kind of give people a connection there so that they can use those other resources. There's various other partner organizations that we might send them to gain assistance.
So your nonprofit is really sort of like a facilitator or an informational clearinghouse?
Kind of a middleman, yeah. We try to connect them with the farms with the resources that they might otherwise not be able to find or know where to go to find.
And are you exclusively for farmers?
So farms and small businesses, but exclusively Connecticut.
Very good. How do people learn more about your organization?
So you can go to ctrcd.org, and you'll see on our webpage there's a lot of different programs that we offer. We also have the Connecticut Veteran Grown on that page, which you can talk to Sarah, my colleague Sarah, afterwards with regard to that if you'd like. We have a Climate Smart program that was funded through the Department of Ag, where we provided a sub-grant for our Climate Smart practices. We have an environmental review team program as well, which provides services to municipalities and land trusts in assessing open spaces and land.
Assistance with easements and things like that?
I'm sorry?
Assistance with easements and things like that?
Yep, with easements, anything that's not for development, basically. You know, open spaces, recreational land, all kinds of different things, but it has to be for a municipality or a land trust.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for the time this morning. And Christian Swanson chatting with us here. She is the Energy and Environmental Programs Coordinator for the Connecticut Resource Conservation and Development Organization. You can find them at ctfarmenergy.org or ctrcd.org. Christian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs John Voquette. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.